Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm Johnita Stanton. We have Reginald Perryman, Shaka Williams. We are Tesari. This is the There's Something About Real Estate podcast where we talk all things real estate. What up, dog? Boom, 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 boom. Right. Yeah, wait, one, two, three.
Oh, yeah.
What up, dog? We have tonight with us for like, I don't know, it's like your third time on.
With us,
Miss Erica Simpson, no longer of one company, but of another one. Go ahead and introduce yourself, girl.
What Erica you done? Simpson, Next Door Lending. just started there February 1st, kicked off Black History Month, right?
All right?
After 14 years at Gold Star Lending. So this space is new. Right. I'm the branch manager, and it's a broker. We're also a lender, and so move to grow. Mm-hmm. Right, I started to get a little complacent there, Gold Star, comfortable. So this is starting me to stretch a little, looking for some loan officers, if you guys want to get some training. And we have 84 lenders.
I told her I'm quitting today.
She not quitting today. She not quitting today, yeah. I told her I'm a helper, you know. So, you know, it's new. It is a learning curve for me, but I'm excited to be in this new space. I got my partner, William Hawkins and Sean Williams. And so we are doing some great big things here. So,
right,
you know, just looking forward, you know, to growth.
So y'all want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
Well, I think I told y'all at some point in time I do have a mortgage license. But when I decided that I was going to go under their umbrella and be part of their team, they made me fill out a job application. I couldn't believe it.
That was difficult, wasn't it?
I was like, what? I did not sign up for this. I did not agree to apply for a job.
That was difficult for me as well. We haven't filled out loan applications. I mean, a job application in 20-some years being
they
self-employed.
Asked for a resume.
A resume that I did not have.
I was like, what? Yeah. You should have called me.
It was difficult.
I
would
have got you ready, girl.
I am the resume.
Right.
But anyway, so what's been going on? What you up to?
Everything.
Everything.
Detroit.
All right.
Reggie voice.
Okay. So I think we were all kind of hanging at an event last night, and it was pretty cool. Bunch of investors. Definitely the plugs are out there if you're, you know, looking for different things on the investment end, ways to learn and grow and mentor. But we have some different perspectives on what left the room, you know, that you actually get what you needed. And they were kind of talking about how to invest. And then, like, more specifically, probably they were focusing a lot of what's going on in Detroit and how to invest in Detroit.
Right.
So I spoke to Erica. And she felt like, how did you feel after the meeting?
I was disappointed.
But why?
If I'm an investor and I'm coming to an investment group or an event, I want you to teach me how to invest. And a lot of storytelling, you know, and I'm proud of everybody that was there. And I can appreciate that. But as a lender, as someone in my business, I need the blueprint. I give blueprints. They didn't give any blueprints. And so I sat there and I listened intently to the numbers of speakers. But we don't know how they got started. We know what they did.
Right.
But we don't know where they got started. So for someone like myself, who is not an experienced investor, like we talked about the last time I flipped and how that was a complete nightmare, if I was looking to invest there, I would have left with a ton of questions. So,
and then you had some.
I had a ton of.
Yeah, and we have some. And so what I did was we had this conversation. This is like right. Throughout the day. We was at the salon getting our hair done and things like that.
Right.
And I hit Erica. Go ahead.
Let me say something. So the event, that was my idea, that we were teaching people how to invest specifically in Detroit, mm-hmm. because everybody there were already investors, or probably 90-95% of the room were experienced investors.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the investor meetup.
I think that it's maybe 25% of the room.
No, it's more than that. that attend those. Because you got to look at how many members, then how many speakers, and then they get newbies there, but not too many.
Most of them people didn't know.
So that's one of the things I saw that, because I've been a few times,
right.
And it did seem to be that because of some of the people that they had on the panel, now you did have some people who probably wouldn't have known about the space.
Right.
They're not exposed to it, and they can kind of go back.
Yeah.
But I think that it was a lot of – I think that it was a lot of newbie investors, people – so, like, Erica. Erica has done an investment.
Right.
But she has not done more than one flip. Right. And then you have people there who are, like, wholesalers. Right. Some of the young men that we spoke to, they had gotten their first contract as a wholesaler.
Right.
And they were waiting to close still. And they didn't know very much about their transaction and, you know, really how they got there. There was experience, like, some of the people that were there, they're kind of like, you know, we have wholesale teams, we have money, you know, those people.
Right.
I think, so maybe 60-40?
I'm going by the people I met and then the people I already know,
mm-hmm.
right? And I just think that, so when I first heard about the event, I was like, oh, they're learning how to invest in Detroit because they already know how to invest.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to know to understand Detroit. The nuances of Detroit. But when I seen the panelists and how it was going, I was like, oh, they're introducing people that do Detroit investments. So if you want to learn, you need to connect mm-hmm. with these particular mm-hmm. people.
I mean, sorry.
So that was a different perspective.
I had a good take. Yeah. So like I had a good take. Like I felt, so I was tired and no, I didn't want to sit there for all the time, but I had a good experience. My experience was very different from Erica's experience.
Right.
But I do want to talk tonight about how to invest and how to invest especially here in Detroit. And I kind of did like let's do a run through this list and see. So this is kind of like, remember we did that one episode? We're not going to be able to talk about all these bullet points. We can get a couple, but I want to see what y'all think about the order. So I did must have a formula.
All right. What's the formula real quick?
It's a percentage of the ARV. So right. We like 65%. Some investors go up to 75%. But I haven't really heard many.
Do you understand what that is?
I'm in real estate or right. mortgages, so I understand it. So that's something I felt that should have been talked about.
Right.
Because when Shaka came to our house, we wanted to know if this was a good deal or not. Right.
Right.
We had no idea of the formula because that was a bad deal, right? So we ended up putting too much money in the house. And it looked like we made a ton of money, right? But we didn't. Had we had the formula, we probably wouldn't have bought the house, or I could have spoke to the seller and said, hey, you know, this deal isn't great. So 65%, that's big, though.
Well,
what does that be?
Well, that's not so that formula isn't like set in stone. That's mm-hmm. that's each individual's
has their own formula.
Yeah, like some people don't even use that formula. Some people say, if I make $20,000, regardless of what you know, that could be 90% of the
right.
You know what I mean? So that's just you know, but I think that's a safe number, though. I feel like
that's very 65. 65 is very conservative.
But 70 to 75 is average.
Yes.
But I feel like if you're a newbie investor, so that's what I was telling them, like for them, it would have allowed them for their mistakes as a first-time investor.
Right.
You know what I mean? They would have been at the 65%. Then they could have made all the errors and still made money. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But I think to, like what Shaka just said, for me always, I've never had to like break the bank. I would love to, but if I turn a good profit, so for me, I kind of look at it. Well, what did I add to my year? You may look at it different. You know. But for me, it's like, especially when I had like dual career and had another job. I'm like, if I made $40,000 at work and then I just went and made another 10 or 20, now my income just increased by 20. You know. So it's just, I think you have to really understand what you want for yourself and what your goals are.
Mm-hmm. Right. Literally, because for me, it's how much time did I spend to make the money?
And for me, it's time and money at risk. So for example, if I have to put money up and it's going to be a 6-month project, I need to make that much more money than if it was a 3-month project for the same amount of money, right? Because I'm risking my time and my money where I can put that money somewhere else and make more money with it. So I'm always comparing it to other options. And sometimes if it doesn't fit in your formula, it's best to just wait and find a deal that does.
For sure. 100% agree with that.
So we just answered like 3 of those.
But did you hear, so but she need to understand what everybody just said. So I'm sorry, did you say yours? Yeah, you said it. You did. So what you would need to understand there is, Reggie's saying he's spending his money. So he's taking his money from somewhere, somewhere else that's either making money somehow, right?
Right.
He's taking it from there. So if he's placing it in this other investment, in this real estate deal, then he needs to make more than what he's making wherever he's taking it from, which makes all the sense in the world, right?
Right.
But I don't like to use my own money. So I don't have that same perspective. You know right. what I mean? I prefer not to use my money. So
jumping a gun.
Typically, well, no, because we're talking about our strategies and why are we coming up with our strategy, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I don't like to use my own money. So I don't care as much as him. Like Reggie be on a tight deadline. You know what I mean?
But even when I'm doing hard money lending, I'm the same way.
So hard money puts you on a deadline, but I'm not as tight. So right. now that's when I'm structuring my loan. You know, my right. lender based on how quickly I plan on getting it done.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You get
right.
what I mean? But then, so I have another business though. So you got to keep this in mind. So I have another business. This was one of the things that actually all of us run into. Right. Anybody that invests with me has run into this problem is, so I make more money in my primary business,
right?
Right. As a contractor than I do on the flip. So the flip is going to be placed on the back burner because of what right. kind of what Reggie's saying, you know what I mean? Like shit. To go do that flip, I gotta lose money that, you know, doing somebody else's project. So
let me ask you this, Erica. So the amount of money you made off of that flip, right? How long would it take you to make that money as a loan rep closing loans?
We actually lost right. on that deal.
So
I mean, the goal was if I could make $30,000 right. in 6 months, it would have been worth it to me.
Right. So that becomes your formula or your basis, right?
Yeah.
So it's all about risk tolerance. So whatever you can tolerate first and foremost, but then you have to think all money aside from money invested, where else could you have made $30,000 at in probably less time or with less effort? So if you could have did that as a loan rep.
She definitely could have.
As a loan officer, so.
She could have marketed.
You know, you asked from my, you know, yeah. as a loan officer, then $30,000 aggressively, right?
Right.
2 months.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So, you know, I really wanted to make more than that. I thought the house was only going to sell for $240,000 because remember, we priced it. And right. at the time, it really was. But right. we got in this sweet spot.
Right.
Right. Between April, you know, because I think we were talking to you in January. Yep. So April came and some sweet spot happened.
Yep.
Joseph sold a house. Avery sold a house. And then the market hit like 280, 300. And that's right. how we were able to get in and not take such a loss. Right. I would like to do it, but I would like the formula.
Right.
Contractors are hard.
So did you get the formula?
I don't have. Well, no. I'm
between 60 and 65.
I got the 60 and 75.
Don't go above 75% of the ARV. So if you talk to someone and they say that house is worth $200,000, you do not ever want to be at max 75% all in.
Okay. So the other issue is the contractors, the general, the right. GC. Yeah, that is more difficult than anything. So I know I'm moving ahead, so we're going to get to that.
No,
but
that's perfect.
That was the next thing. So
she's talking about her issues she was
having. Yeah, so we say, okay, the house was worth, you know, $240,000. We're going to multiply that for right. those who are watching, 65 to 75%. So now you say, okay, what are the repairs? Now I'm trying to find contractors. I can't get them to show up.
Right.
They're just looking at the house. Oh, this is beautiful. this is a beautiful house, Eric. Right. And I'm like, yeah. You know, it's kind of like what was happening yesterday. This is beautiful. That's fine.
Right.
But could you give me an estimate? And could you do it detailed? And, you know, with all transparency, I never got a detailed estimate. And for me to be in the business, again, it's super disappointing that I could not get a GC
working. Who did you call to get your contractors from?
Well, Shaka came over. I didn't know, like, if you wanted to do the work or not.
Did you ask him?
Did we ask you?
No.
We didn't. We asked for your opinion.
They was already moving. So when I came, over in the middle of their, you know, they were already having an issue.
So when you initially started, how did you find your contractors?
Well, the cousin was a contractor, right? And I didn't want to do that just because of the family and how that can get messy. We went with somewhat of a neutral person that I knew that was doing some work. I would absolutely do it different.
Right.
But when you're trying to get a house and you're getting a deal, because the seller was an agent. He's also a builder. And so he was kind of pressing, and so we were rushing. I would have just passed on the deal because I wanted to get three estimates.
Right.
I wanted Rachel to do it.
Who drafted your purchase agreement?
There you.
Hmm? Who drafted your purchase agreement?
He did. He's an agent. We did it at FSBO.
Oh.
Right?
Gotcha. You didn't have an agent working on your behalf.
I didn't have an agent working on my behalf. So I would have waited and gotten three estimates. But what I find is it's very hard to find contractors. And so I would have wanted last night for the contractors to be there because that is the biggest issue, right? So when I talk to 203K, I always give them your number. I have no idea if they call. But I always give them your number because I'm like, where are you going to find a GC? Right. And those deals fall apart immediately.
Right.
Because they're looking for, you know, Pookie and Ray Ray.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So I want to stick to our, you know, our outline here.
No, no.
Here.
Well, let me help you with the contractor piece. So I know several good contractors, and we all do flips, and we know contractors, one sitting right here, right? So your contractors come from referrals, just like a good loan rep, just like a good agent. It's just that in your situation, you had a deadline. The seller was pressing you, right? That was your sign to walk away. Because, like, you couldn't do the due diligence that you wanted, so the deal just wasn't for you. I would have really wanted 2 to 3 contractor bids on that job.
Absolutely.
Because, and the right contractor. So, because one thing I tell people, sometimes a hard money lender is actually protecting you, especially a newbie investor, because they're only going to loan you so much, 65%, 77% of the ARV, right? But they're also going to want a scope of work from a contractor.
Right.
And if the contractor can't give you that, that's not the contractor.
And the deal is dead. Yeah. I mean, I look back, but it was pressure, you know, because we know what Bagley is selling for.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm going to tell y'all the real truth about her deal, though. So this is what I find with newbie investors.
Right.
So when I came over there, they were already in the demo phase, and they kind of knew what they was doing. And so at that point, I said, stop demoing.
Right.
Because what happened is I see a lot of newer investors. They go in there and they're thinking flip that house.
Right.
Eric and them house came out. That was a nice house. That was a really nice flip. But I don't spend all that money. They didn't have to do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? They could have spent way less money, took way less time, and made more profit.
Right.
But I think that had I gotten one GC, right, it would have been, I don't want to say like package deal, but I think it would have been more like a package deal. You know, we were talking about how it was all, I call it nickel and dime, it was pieced together.
Right.
Had we had the GC, I think it would have been, and my profit would have been more.
Right. So or you would have seen the GC numbers and being like, no, that's not
doing it. No, I'm not doing it. So with that, so, you know, the formula, what you want to net. So we had an idea of what we wanted to net, but we really couldn't figure out what we could net because we couldn't have numbers.
Right.
So for me, even, you know, this is what I would want to know. What is the formula? and hey, what do you want to net? And then you say this is a no-go or deal or no, right? And then here's your three GCs.
Right.
To go through the house and do, you know, an estimate of all the repairs. And then after that, you know, there was utilities, there were holding costs, there were unexpected issues with the plumbing, right? We spent a lot of money on them plumbing issues, and we didn't know anything about it trying to. It was thousands of dollars at the end. So, you know, what is it called? A contingency? Like a 20 or 30% contingency on top of?
Probably 10.
That's why that's 65%.
Yeah. And then you do the holding costs. And so it ended. It was a mortgage. I would have wanted the formula. So, and I think our investors yesterday don't have the formula. It wasn't like that.
They have their own formula.
So you were talking about getting a GC over there. When I first started long, long time ago, I would pay. So some people I would pay for my, like if I hit a general contractor up, I would pay for a bid or and I would get that from a couple people. But then I also would find people. You know, I would go and find a couple of people who does concrete or drywall and plumbing. And then I would meet these people and have them come to the house. They would give me their bids. These are bids that I don't necessarily have to pay for because they're not running a business, per se. But what you're doing is you're getting a feel for those people, and then you're going to decide if you're going to give them an opportunity to fuck your shit up.
Yeah, and then at least you get the cost for each piece of it, right? Because if you have your concrete guy and you have your electrician, you start getting costs for those individual items, and you can put it together. One of the speakers did say something that I always say. Most people know this: you make the money when you buy the property, not in a deal. So, like when we talk about formula. You look, okay, I'm buying this property for 90. What are my holding costs? What are the contingencies, right? And then you say, okay, is this deal still worth it? So up front, it was just mistakes, rookie mistakes that was made that you could have avoided. But
and she didn't call until she was already the goddamn deal.
Yeah, you call after the fact.
But let me say one more thing, though, for people on that. So there's an easier way because people always want – I get calls all the time for quotes.
Right.
I don't want to do nobody quote. Like, you know what I mean? I'm busy. Like, I don't mind coming and bid your project. I don't know. Do you negotiate your quotes with your contractors that you work with? You get what I'm saying?
So I'm going to have two – I get two bids from contractors that I like dealing with. And those numbers just the
numbers. That's it, what it is, right.
And my thing, too, like, sometimes I pay a little bit more based on their timeline.
For sure.
Because the good contractors, I had contractors I had to wait 3 weeks on, but they came and knocked the job out in month and a half versus 3 months.
But if we're using that formula, though, so this is an easier way for that I tell people. So if you're using that formula, let's say the ARV was $200,000. And if you're using the 65%, then you got 130 all in. So if you purchase the property at $100,000, that means you only got $30,000 to do your rehab. So now you can start knowing if certain things is realistic. If you know you only got $30,000, you can't go in there redoing the kitchen, you know, tearing out the kitchen, tearing out two bathrooms, repainting everything, doing the drains, the what else they do over there? Y'all did
So we did kitchen, bathrooms, we redid the floors, the walls were terrible, skimming. Right. But I let me go back on this one, too. So can I move ahead?
Go ahead.
All right, so picking the property. So I'm an investor. Where do I find a property? So that's where I'm at now.
That's also
where?
So there, wholesalers. Agents, like you found your property, neighborhood, spirit influence, people you already know?
Not for me. So the people that were there last night, right? Different walks of life, right? We had different ethnicities, and I saw it, and they were taking notes. But I'm like, if I want it, I got $100,000, right? Well, actually, I just spoke to a woman, not even 2 hours ago. She said, Erica, I've got $500,000.
Right.
Where do I buy? I could not answer the question.
Are you talking about where areas?
No. Where do I find a house? She literally asked me where, And I'm like, I'm going on the podcast and I'm going to share it with you because that's what we want to know. I got some money.
Right.
And how do I find a house? That is not
I got an answer.
Easy.
Oh, that's easy.
I got to see.
Nobody,
the easiest
and nobody talked about it last night.
Well,
They talked about the tax. They talked about the land bank, but they never said, here's the website. Mm-hmm. Here's
There's
the link.
There's no website, though.
But they never gave instructions. See, I'm new. Even though I'm in lending, I'm still very ignorant to investing. Mm-hmm. So where? I'm going to ask you for those.
So when I first came into investing, the first thing that I hired was a realtor.
Right.
Right? That's the first person that I hired. I want to get a realtor that's going to be able to show me how they're going to know the area. If you have a good realtor, they should know all that information. Right. They should be able to give me my ARVs. You know what I mean? Right. They should be able to, if you knew, they may, if you got a good realtor, they should be able to point you in some of the direction of some of the good contractors.
Right.
You know what I mean? So the realtor, I feel like, is your best friend when you're trying to buy a house as a brand. There are other ways. You can't go through the wholesalers, but we already know that the wholesalers,
they
playing a different game.
But so you gotta, I'm sorry. So I don't know if you had a chance to review what I sent you back, but in my opinion, so we get deals from wholesalers often. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I don't buy from a wholesaler because it's not a good deal, but they done put together some numbers. And this is, I'm not trying to hate on y'all, I promise. I know some good ones out there. I just haven't. But a lot of times the numbers are not right. So Shaka sent me a deal yesterday and I looked at it and I'm like, 170, not 200. And when I look, you know, and it's based on how we look at value, we have to do it in a safe way. We can look at it and say, you know, maybe we can get to 200 or 220 or whatever, but we have to stay at that safe number. So, like, wholesalers are cool, especially if you can find somebody who knows, like, what they do. Like a John Clear, I think, you know, but he's a wholesaler. Like, he's a licensed agent. Like, he knows his stuff. He knows what he's doing.
But I'm new. I'm still.
So.
I got to, like, focus.
Really?
I don't know an agent that can help me. We're talking about the investors that are in the room last night. I know everybody. Hello, everybody.
Oh, yeah. She's talking about. Okay. Talking about
I'm talking. Right. I'm an investor. I'm in the room.
Right.
And I need to know a good agent. I don't know where to start. So
interview agents.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So like last night when we went and we went to like the little where they talk afterwards, like they was sitting there, you know, like pulling out their phones, showing me. That was like, oh my God, you're giving me so much information. Right. Like, thank you so much. And I'm just showing them the map. You know, the same thing that young boy was doing when he got up there. Showing them. So, but it's more so when I'm advising, it's based off of me. So Shaka has a way that he looks at property. Reggie has a way that he looks at property. I have a way that I look at property. And how you find property is, I think Shaka's suggesting you get a realtor and hire one, interview a couple of them, maybe do a couple deals and find the one that fits you best. If you are in the business or maybe you're experienced or got some knowledge from somewhere. Like for me, I just went off what I knew. I'm from Detroit. I understand the city. I've seen it in different waves. I've lived all over it, west side, east side, the middle side, like everywhere, literally. And I understand like where it's been and where it's going. Right?
So you ain't gonna be normal.
Young boy yesterday, he invests the same way that I invest. Mm-hmm. He's coming from a different perspective because obviously he's not from Detroit. He's from, he said, New York and Miami, and now he's here because he feels like the equity is here in this land. But he understands my way of finding property.
Realtor.
Tell you the way. You brand new to real estate investing. You got some money. You find a realtor that knows about investing, right? How many investors do you work with? What's your experience with investing? Do you invest yourself? Then you go to a meetup, like a regular real estate investment group meetup. You look for those. In addition to that, you advertise that you buy homes. Them the three best ways. Because when you go to the meetup, you're going to meet other realtors. You're going to meet wholesalers. And you announce that you're looking to buy homes. And you have your formula. You tell them what you're looking for. The realtor's going to be working for you. The wholesaler's going to put you on the list. They're going to email you. Even if they're garbage deals, there's going to be one or two that come across the table that may make sense, or it may be something that makes sense, but the numbers aren't right and you can negotiate the price down. Then when you advertise to everybody, your family, friends, let everybody know that you're investing in real estate, and then word of mouth will start happening. Oh, my cousin buy homes, or they're looking to buy and invest in real estate, and word to get around. So those are the three best ways to go out.
So I think properties. Those are really good ways, but I'm saying, right, I'm going from my experience. So they grew up a little bit different than me, right? They're second generation realtors, and they've been in the business, right?
That's why we write.
Right, but I came in not knowing nothing, right? I don't know nothing about real estate investing at all. And then I got a couple dollars, and I want to go invest in real estate. And so what Reggie's suggestion is those are all good ways, but that could be information overload, and you got to cipher through all that information. I think his first answer is the best answer. Find you a investor-friendly realtor, because that person is going to give you. So wholesalers are trying to make money off of, they make the money the higher they sell the property. And I know that the agent does too, but the commission percentage between $20,000 difference is low, whereas $20,000 is real $20,000 for a wholesaler.
Yeah. Right.
You get what I'm saying? So I feel like the first person you reach out to is a realtor. So I reached out to a realtor. He would find all my deals. He would give me my ARVs. He would show me my different comps. He would walk me through in the comps. He'll say, "Here, this is a comp for one of the properties you're trying to buy," and so that I would understand. That's how I learned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you got $500,000, call Reggie.
Right.
So research too. So that's the thing that I'm learning from the out of town investors that are coming here and they're buying property, and then they're doing some of our jobs too, and they're not even licensed, but it's the research. They're sitting somewhere, it's YouTube University, Google, they're looking at the maps, they're looking at the city plans, but they're getting the information quickly, and they are successful.
And they got a realtor, I guarantee you. They calling the realtor.
The other thing too, to Shaka's point, so my first investment deal in 2004, it was the same. So yes, I was a, did I have my license? Yes, I had my license. And I wanted to be an investor. I wanted to find property, but I already knew how to go and look for property. But the two people that decided to partner up with me, I was there, you know, they trusted me to find the property and understand that we would be able to sell it for a profit.
Okay, so I have a question. So what about this land bank, and they mentioned city?
Stay the hell away from all that.
If you brand new, it's probably not the, if you very like brand new, like no real estate experience whatsoever, I don't think that's the best route to go, because you're going to have a timeline, and then it's just a different monster, right? So like you got a 6-month timeline to fix it. Well, if you brand new, you don't know what properties you shouldn't buy in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. Like, if you need concrete roof work and all of that, and you got to wait 3 months before you can do the work, it's not the best route. Mm-hmm. So, and then even with the land bank, you got to submit documentation and everything and a proposal. You might not get approved to buy the property, even though you got the money to do it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's more for an experienced investor.
And they got deed restrictions.
Yeah. So,
okay. So as far as, now, I get calls a lot about, I've got this house and I need money. Right. That was the other thing. They didn't talk about any funding. I was a little late.
Right.
But obviously, as a traditional lender, I don't have rehab money. Actually, Next Door Lending does have rehab. But what I mean is, you got to fit. So they didn't talk about financing. A lot of their credit isn't where it needs to be.
Right.
So some of the, I think I was dealing with Kiavi for a minute. They've got credit score. So it's like, hey, I got this property. I need to rehab it. It's got all this equity. The ARV is here. But where do I get the money? So for the people that have got low credit,
Yeah,
there were lenders there earlier because they had the wants and needs. So the people that do private money and hard money lending, they were there. So you'll find them in those rooms because they're trying to, if you find a property, the money will follow you, right? So now they may not give you the same deals as Kiavi and a lower rate, and they're going to, some of them are going to structure their deals different. So you'll probably pay back more money sometime, and some of them would finance, give you better financing options where it's 100% all in. So it's different ways to get the money, but you just got to be in the right rooms with the people.
Yeah. And so I want to go back. So because it was a really good meeting, they did have realtors. They had realtors get up there and say, I'm an investor-friendly realtor. They had lenders saying, hey, they was doing everything but waving the flag saying, I got money for you. Right. So then you're supposed to, you know, listen real hard and take that number or either go up to them after the meeting and, you know, make sure you got their information so that now that's somebody you got in your back pocket.
So the answer is go to the meetings. So if you go to the meetings and shit, I ain't gonna lie, I wanted to leave that meeting about five times.
I did.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So, but if you go to the meetings, you will get the information as in regards to the private and the hard money lenders. So go ahead.
Look at the difference. I was just gonna say when you got finished, the difference between private and hard money funding is kind of what Reggie was more so talking about. So again, I love hard money lenders. I always have. I don't count other people's money. And I think that's a lot of times where people go wrong with hard money lenders. They're so worried about like how much money they're going to make off the deal. And so they, you know, new and not getting off the ground and can't get started because you're worried about
going a little bit further than she was talking about, though. So if you, so you're just coming in new, you don't care about that. Like that has to be go into, I mean, it really does it because you don't able to, if you don't have the money, you don't have a deal.
Right.
So whatever it costs is the cost, right? Okay. It's the same way as the contract.
So typically, so here, someone calls me, they want to buy a primary house. I can say what a person needs. So how much money would an investor need to buy a house? Is there a certain percentage? Do we need 10%, 20% if we're going to go with financing?
Yeah,
what do they usually want?
Depending on the lender, some lenders will say 10%, some will say 20%. You actually have some that'll do 100% if the deal is right. So, again, it's all about formulas and risks.
But does credit play a piece with the hard money?
Not typically with hard. So that's what I was getting to. The difference between hard money and private funding most of the time is the hard money is typically very, like, asset-based. They don't care. If they like you and you can kind of show them that you're going to get it done within a timeline and you're going to agree to their terms, you're probably going to get the money for your project.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. But so y'all saying the difference between, I feel like private money and hard money is damn near the same.
You can get better rates with like private. So like when she said Kiavi, so Kiavi is more of like a private lender. They are going to give you a better rate than say Bob that stood up and said, call me at 123456.
Maybe. So that's what I'm saying. So private money and hard money is pretty much the same to me. Like it's not based on your credit at all. It's based on the deal. And then the rate that you're going to get from whoever you're getting the money from depends on what you negotiate, right?
Yeah, so when you call a place like a Kiavi or some of these other banks that are investor friendly and have those products, you're going to be at different tiers based on your credit. So some of them won't go below a certain credit score. And the better your credit score is, the better interest rate you get.
And the lower down payment.
And the lower down payment you get.
Some hard money lenders, if you got some experience and you build a relationship, they'll say, okay, your first deal, 20% down. Next deal, you'll get down to 10%, 5% or whatever. And then you're going to have different options for rates. So if you're going to do a 12-month or a 24-month, it's still some room to negotiate, but they still have like some boundaries, what they're going to protect themselves and their risks as well.
How y'all differentiating between private and hard money?
I'm different.
Private is the individual or person that's just saying, hey, I got some money and I'm loaning it out. And I'm flexible with the terms. For hard money lenders, they already got like their terms like a mortgage company, right?
But he just said the same thing.
He said hard money twice by mistake.
No, he didn't do it by mistake. He was explaining. So what he just explained is that what I'm saying. I don't know how you. What is John?
He's hard money.
Is he?
Yeah. So he on a gap. He's gonna charge you.
I ain't talking about on the gap. I'm talking about on a first position loan. What is he?
So I'm going to answer the question the way I like.
But you're changing
so,
the...
So, because I'm not. So he loans, that particular person that you just brought up, he loans differently, and he often charges much more than what we're going to get if we go to a bank like a Kiavi. So we just closed one of our loans where we have like a 7.5% rate, and we're going to be in that loan probably for 30 years.
On a refi.
Okay, but that's still a private. Those are it was a DSCR loan, and that's not your standard. But anyways, so DSCR is a QM or a non-QM product?
It's a non-QM.
So it's a non-QM product. So that's what I'm saying. So it's a non-QM product, and it still was a fairly decent rate. And we're not gonna get that from a hard money lender. Typically, they want their money back in 6 months. If you're experienced, you can press them on that. And then their rates are typically going to be like 3-5% higher than your bigger companies, your private funded companies. And then if you want them to take bigger risks, then their prices go up from there. And then if you want to get into where somebody's going to give you 100% of your funding, they probably want 25% easy.
So you get so many different scenarios there, and that's why I just say.
So just, prior. All right, so fine, yeah. So my other question was, now rehab, how long should rehabs take, right? So I get those calls a lot too. Mm-hmm. Hey, Eric, I need to refi out of this investment property. The lender, you know, they gave me 6 months or 12 months, I got a refi, right?
Right.
But I think my rehab took... I think it took 9 months, right? So typically, what shouldn't a rehab take 3 to 6 months?
It depends.
Depending on how much work, but that goes back into the formula. That's what I shoot for, 3 months. Anything longer than that, I don't want to do the deal because it's tying my money up too long.
Mm.
So because you're going from 3 months rehab, another month or two on the market, another month or two to close, that's just too long for a project. But most of the flips I've done has been like 3 months or less.
Can you gut a house and get it complete in 3 months?
Yeah.
Depending on who you hire.
Depends on who you hire.
I'm thinking because you hear that.
That wouldn't be a realistic ask. So if you were gutting the house down
just
to
the kitchen, just the kitchen and bathrooms.
Oh, yeah.
Let me say that.
Yeah.
So you gut the kitchen and baths.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about fairly cosmetic with a couple.
And it can be done in 90 days.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Now, your stuff could have been done fast. But I'm telling you this, so they always say, right, cheap, you can't get all, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to get it done fast, I can come in there and do some shit real fast,
right.
But I'm going to charge you for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And most people don't want to pay, so then now if you don't want to pay, if you want to get it at a discounted rate or at a lower rate, then now you're going to have to come in, you're going to be on the schedule, you're going to be put on the schedule that, on my schedule. You know what I mean? That allows me to optimize my time. But if you want me to come in there and knock your stuff out real fast, I can.
Yeah, because good contractors usually have several jobs going. Their painters are all going in from this house to that house to the next one. So they have to have an efficient system going on. But if you say, I need this done by this date, and it's, say, 60 days, now they're pulling people off of other jobs. They're holding off on other money to come do your job. So that's going to come at a premium price. So if you allow the contractor to work within their system, you can still get the same quality of work, probably without that upcharge on it as well.
Okay.
So if I'm doing demo on this house, I might got two or three demos going at once, and I can just send my guys from one to the next. He may be subbing out the roofing job, but he got 6 roofing jobs to do. So where you're thinking, like, nobody's over here doing a roof, and it's been a week already. No, you just number 4 in line. So my roofer is going from this house to that one, and then they'll be on yours. But if you say you want this roof done by this Saturday, then it's probably going to cost you because now I'm missing out on money over here.
Okay, so we got get into some investor groups, attend the meetings.
Right.
Find some investor-friendly agents.
Right.
Right, do some research on them.
Yep.
Okay. Try to get some financing, right? Credit need to be, I would say, decent and have anywhere between 10 to 20% possibly as a newbie.
I don't feel like credit is
not a factor.
Credit not a factor, but You know, when it comes to me, if you're trying to, if you're trying to buy and hold, I need the credit to be decent for the DSCR loan, right?
Yeah, for sure.
At least a 620 credit score.
This is why I say it helps, because if you run into a situation where you can't get it done before that balance is due, you're probably going to have to refinance or do something. So credit helps. And then when you go to different lenders that will look at your credit and give you a different rate, then maybe that'll help you as well. So don't neglect credit altogether, but is it absolutely necessary? No. Mm-hmm. The deal, the money is in the deal, not based on the credit. They're all asset-based.
Okay. So he's talking about like opening up your options for exit strategies.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, the exit strategies.
If you have an exit strategy.
You know, in case you can't sell or it's a buy and hold. Okay. All right. I feel a little bit better.
So we got one more. Pick one good one, because we got to wrap it up.
Okay, one good one. I would like for you guys to email me the formula. So you have, I thought I saw on one of the shows that you had like an Excel sheet or something. Didn't you have something like that, Shaka?
I gave you the formula. You got the formula. Yeah. All right, but I'll send it to you again.
I know I got it, but I'm just saying, just in case somebody over here wanted.
70% all in should be your max. 65% is the target. So if the house is worth whatever that dollar amount is, $100,000, you want to be $70,000 maximum all in, but preferably $65,000. But then the issue with that is, you would have to say to yourself, is this worth me making $30,000?
But what about the holding cost, right?
Exactly. So
is that 65? Is it low because you've already factored in?
Right.
You got it.
Holding
cost?
That's
why you do 65. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
That's already factored in.
That's going to give you all your, that's going to help you with everything. That's going to help you with your contingencies, your holding costs, your everything.
Okay. So 65,000 should include,
65%.
I mean, off of 100. Mm-hmm. That should include holding cost and the rehab and whatever I purchased it for.
Right.
Okay.
Now, if you got a lender, now here's where people, it's a preference. So if you got a lender that's giving you 100% of everything, repairs, and you come in almost like zero down one of those loans, you may say, okay, I'm just covering the holding cost out of pocket. So you might have like $5,000 or $6,000 of your own money over that period of time, and you make and eat that because you're going to make $50,000 or $60,000 profit off of it. So your investment is $5,000 or $6,000 to make $50,000 or $60,000.
Okay. Now they kept saying their biggest mistakes was mentors. So if we find an investor friendly agent, do I still need a mentor?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You need a mentor.
Somebody that's done it. Hopefully that agent actually invests themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the biggest thing, right? So this is where you get the difference between some wholesalers and realtors. Some wholesalers get it. As a realtor, I need you to make money because you're coming back. So if I sell you a property and your goal is to flip it, I need you to be able to list that property and flip it as soon as possible, because I'm going to make money again when I list it. When I list that property, I'm advertising to the rest of the neighborhood that we sold this property, which attract more sellers. Some of those sellers are going to sell their properties as is, and I'm going to bring those deals back to you and say, hey, would you like to do it again? So now you become a lifelong client, and you're making money and I'm making money. But if I come to you with a deal and you walk away with $5,000, you're going to be like, I don't like doing this no more, right? So now I lost a client. I made my money, but you didn't make nothing, and you just like, I'm done. I'm out the game. So I need to keep you in the game. Mm-hmm.
So are you a mentor?
Yeah.
What about you, Johnita, Shaka? Would y'all mentor?
I ain't a mentor, but I'll talk to people all the time.
I need a mentor.
I keep telling you all the time.
I want a mentor.
Everybody in her bag. I don't swear.
Ain't nobody in this
When
bag.
You call me and I haven't showed up.
Okay. So Johnita is a mentor.
Yep.
Reggie is a mentor, and Shaka just...
You just ask me questions.
Just ask Shaka some questions.
Yeah, now when you call me, though, it's not... I don't need
Well, our situation was unique, right? Our conversation was unique, but for the situation I meant was unique.
Right.
Right? It was very sensitive, so I get that.
Right.
Right? But for the new investors, right?
Right.
We want investor-friendly. We want Johnita and Reggie, who are both investors.
I'm not very investor friendly though. But so I will mentor and talk how we talk and give information.
Right. Okay.
But in terms of me being the agent that's gonna run around.
Okay.
Okay.
I feel like I have agents on my team now to do that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Johnny ain't it, guys. So
no,
she's a mentor.
She's it.
She, right.
So here's the difference. If somebody brand new calls Janita and say, I'm looking to buy a house, I got the money or I got funding, and she says, this is how you get started and this is what you do, and she finds them a house and they listen to her and they buy a good deal because they now know what a good deal is, she'll probably show them that property.
Yes.
But if you just out here, well, my budget is, it depends, or I might do this. I don't know if I want to flip. I don't know if I want
to
hold.
And you telling me how to do it?
Yeah, I'm not running around. Mm-hmm. I have agents on my team now to show you homes, but I can't spend a lot of time just running around. But I am investor friendly. My team is investor friendly, but I'm just not going to be the one showing you 15 or 20 homes and doing all of that.
Reggie said the same thing I just
said.
That's
a wrap.
Monday, 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 Mon